Hello, folks. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is one of our new video format episodes. If you're hearing this on the audio podcast feed, know there's a link in the show notes to the video version. And if you're watching this, come on over to the audio podcast, where we've been sharing jaw-dropping, boldly told true stories for over 15 years. There's thousands of stories waiting for you on Risk, wherever you get your podcasts, or at risk-show.com. Today, we're featuring a story by one of Risk's all-time favorite regulars, Melanie Hamlett. She told this story in 2012, and I'm going to have a conversation with her about it now in 2025. We also just reran another story of Melanie's that comes up in this conversation, My Life in the House of Clowns from 2013. Melanie is on TikTok at Mel Hamlett, where almost 200,000 followers can find her amazing insights on being a woman in this world today. So without further ado, here's me and Melanie. Hey, folks. So a couple years ago, we started rerunning the very first episodes of Risk. The first one was in 2009. Every Thursday, we do this rerun material, and it's been a really interesting way to look back at how the show began. But every now and then, we hear a story where we think, I don't know how we feel about that one nowadays. So recently, it was time to rerun this episode called Women on Men, and one of our favorite storytellers of all time in our history, Melanie Hamlett, shared a story on that episode called Fuck or Fight. And when we were thinking of rerunning it, some of the editors said, I have a feeling Melanie might feel a little differently about this story nowadays. So we decided not to edit it at all, but to run it as is, and then to invite Melanie, who is now in Paris, right?
No, Lyon, Lyon.
Lyon, Lyon.
Everybody does it. It's okay.
And here I am in New York. We're going to listen back together live right now to this story, Fuck or Fight. It first ran on the podcast in December of 2012. And so it's a real throwback and an interesting thing to be listening back to together.
This is not my normal voice. I have laryngitis, just so you know. I was in Jackson Hole, Wyoming in my mid-20s, and I was working as a ski instructor. And at the end of the season, one of my coworkers has this big blowout party with kegs and like a bonfire in his backyard. And most of the people at the party are actually men, because in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, the ratio of men to women is 10 to 1. And most of the people at this party are like, you know, rich white guys from like the Midwest or the Northeast, and they just want to be ski bums for a while. But there are a few random people at this party, and one of them comes up to me and he introduces himself as Dallas. I don't actually know if that's his name or not, but I loved the name. And Dallas is Southern, and he's from West Virginia, and I'm from Tennessee, and most people at this party aren't, and I just have a soft spot in my heart for rednecks. And this guy is like cartoonishly redneck. Like, he's like, one of the first things he said to me, he's like, So I'm from West Virginia. Do you know West Virginia looks like a middle finger? And he was like, I'm from right here. And he points to his knuckle. It's the same way someone from Michigan is like, I'm from right here, with their little mitten. And they don't actually talk like that. He would say things like, let's pluck a feather, little lady, and get us some wild turkey, you know? And he said things like darling and little lady and baby and whatever, because that's what Southern men do, and I thought it was hilarious. I love to prove to men how strong I am, and I was like, yeah, I'm a whitewater raft guy, and I live in my truck, and blah, 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 and, you know, which I did. And he was, like, bragging about what a man he is and how he was the West Virginia State wrestling champion when he was in high school, and how he'd run in bags for years to sweat off all that weight and starved himself, you know. So we're exchanging stories, and having a good time. Just so you know, I'm not actually like attracted to this guy. I just think he's like hilarious. He looks just like a guy that I would be attracted to because he's got like shoulder length hair and like a puffy jacket with like duct tape covering all the holes. You know, like my kind of man. But there's like no chemistry, so I was just joking around. And before I knew it, it was like 2 a.m, and everybody had either left the party or was like crashing on the floor of my friend's living room. And across the fire, there's only 2 people left other than Dallas and I. And it's one guy, he looks like a redneck, kind of uglier version of the Russian from Rocky IV. Just a huge guy. And then he had a little sidekick, this scrappy little guy. I thought it, like, he was like Schmeagol, kind of like, you know. And I had actually met these guys earlier in the night. The bigger guy was actually a cage fighter. And he had tried hitting on me, and I was like, ah. And then the little scrappy guy was like, called me a cunt because I wasn't like receptive to it. So I was like, I'm staying away from these guys. But now at the end of the night, I'm like right across from them, and they're like leering at me, and they're like talking shit. I can tell because like that, you know, they're like, they say like she, but I can't understand. I can't understand what they're saying, but I know that they got an issue. And then they start talking shit about Dallas, and they're making fun of his accent. And I'm like, what is going on here? And Dallas is like, well, baby, I hate to tell you this, but it looks like we got a fuck or fight situation right now. And I'm like, what is that? He's like, well, these guys came here hoping to fuck, and you're the only woman left, and you're talking to me, so they're not going to leave here till they fight. And I'm like, is that like real? And part of me is thinking like, wait a second, does Dallas think we're going to fuck? Because that's not happening. And then the other part, I was like, whatever, this is Jackson Hole. Everyone just gets high and skis all the time. But no, actually, the cage fighter, moments later, like, walks over to Dallas and just like, blah, 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 and Dallas is like, let's go. And like, he like, they, next thing I know, they're on the ground, and Dallas has him in one of those like homoerotic wrestling holds. He's totally got him pinned. And the cage fighter's like, all right, I'm fine, let me up, I'm gonna go. And Dallas is like, all right then. So he goes to walk away, and so Dallas turns to me to start talking, and the cage fighter comes back, you know, sneaky, and grabs Dallas by the jacket and throws him on the ground and punches him in the face a couple times. Things just got, like, primal and crazy all of a sudden, because I worked in the outdoor industry for years. I'm used to, like, man versus nature and, like, saving people from drowning and, like, crisis. But I'm not used to, like, fisticuffs, man versus man. And, like, I actually think Dallas might, like, die. I mean, this guy's a cage fighter. And, you know, there's blood everywhere. There's so much commotion that the dust being kicked up, I can hardly see what's going on. They're, like, rolling near the fire. And I'm almost about to go inside to, like, get help. You know, this is one of those moments, I'm so used to hanging around men all the time and working with men and doing, like, man jobs that I almost feel like I'm a man sometimes. And then moments like this, I'm like, nope, I'm not a man. I don't know how to handle this. And so, basically, Dallas finally, like, pins this guy in another homoerotic wrestling thing and totally wins. And finally, the cage fighter gives up. And Dallas is like, that's right! Now get out of here! You know? And I just love the way he talks. It's so funny. And so these guys walk away with their tail between their legs. And then Dallas walks over to me. And he's got, like, holes in his jeans. He's covered in dirt and blood. His eyes are, like, clearly going to swell up any moment now. And he looks so vulnerable. And he comes up and he goes, well, baby, I won. And I'm like, yes, you did. And he's like, and I'm also thinking, I'm like, did I cause this? Like, is this my fault? And he says, I need some help with my eye, though. And so I take him into the bathroom and go, like, all Florence Nightingale on him or whatever. And then I'm like, all right, it's time to, like, the party ended a long time ago. I'm going to bed. So I grab my sleeping bag and hit, you know, grab a place on the carpet in the living room because there's people scattered all over asleep. And he goes, baby, I don't feel like going home right now. Do you mind if I lay next to you? And I'm like, okay. You know, and it's normal in, like, in my line of work to sleep next to guys all the time in sleeping bags, and it's not a big deal. So I'm like, whatever. So he's lazy. He doesn't actually have a sleeping bag. I like zip up into mine, and he like sleeps on his shoes and has like no blanket or anything. And he starts spooning me. And I'm like, okay. Part of me is like, red flag. But then I'm like, well, whatever. I'm in like a full-length down condom right now. There's nothing getting between here. And so then he puts his arm over me. And I'm like, okay. But that's when I notice it's shaking. And I'm like, are you okay? And he's like, my heart's racing. I'm like, oh, the cage fighter got you still shook up. And he's like... He's like, no, my heart's racing because I'm lying here next to you. And I'm like, what? Like, I mean, part of me is like, oh, you know, because I've actually, you should probably know at this point in time, I'd actually never had a boyfriend, really. You know, I lived in my truck, like I'm a gypsy. I just like bang guys every once in a while and one night stands, you know, the healthy stuff like that. And I've never had a guy like talk to me that way or be like, you know, sincere and warm like that. And part of me is like, well, maybe I should just cuddle with this guy and whatever. And then that voice got in my head, the one that every woman in this room, I think, knows about. Even my prudest friends have done this, where they're like, well, when some man does something for them or saves them or like, it's just really nice. And they're like, maybe I should fuck them, you know? You know, because I've got tons of credit card debt and, you know, student loans. I'm okay with that, but I'm not okay with sexual debt. And so I'm like, yeah, I should fuck him, like, throw the dog a bone, poor guy. And I was like, fuck or fight. He thought he was going to get fucked because that's why he got in a fight. And so my brain convinces me I need to do this. And so I'm like, where am I going to do it? You know, and I'm like, there's people in the room and they're sleeping. Where do they wake up? I was like, I know, I'll do it in the bathroom. So I nudge him. I'm like, hey, do you want to go to the bathroom? And at this point, he's actually fallen asleep. So clearly, this guy is not doing any of this. This is all Melanie creating this drama. And I'm like, well, come on, don't you want to go to the bathroom? And he's like, I don't want to go to the bathroom. You know, and I was like, I'm fine. I tried. You know, like, I mean, I didn't say that, but I'm thinking, like, good effort, Melanie. So the next morning I wake up and he was like, baby, can I get you some breakfast or something? You want to come to my house? And I'm like, okay, you know, so I go, and we go back to his house, which is actually a double wide, and cartoonishly Southern again, like TV on the milk crate or whatever, no furniture. So he gives me a tour of the house, and you know, it just happened so fast, you guys. Like, I was like taking a tour of his room, and next thing I know, his head's between my legs, and I'm like, wait, no, oh my God, wait a second, this is not supposed to play out this way, but I'm already kind of in too deep. And I'm like, at this point in my life, I actually hated when guys went down on me. Things have changed, just in case I end up dating any of you. Because I was like, I just assume men hate doing that. And if they do it, they want me to have an orgasm. And I'm so worried about not having an orgasm, I can never relax. And I can't say I don't like it because I don't want word to get out on the street that women don't like this. So I like take one for the team and I'm like, yay, this is great. You know? So like, I'm like ooing, awing, whatever. But in my mind, I'm like looking at the ceiling and counting like things on the wall. And I'm also like making jokes because that's where my mind goes. I'm like, well, Melanie, you're in your own little porno now. Melanie knows Dallas, you know? And then he like looks up at me and he was like, you like this, baby? And I was like, yeah. I mean, he looks so determined on pleasing me. This is a really good man, you know, and he's really good at what he does. It's me. And I'm like, I do. But you know what would be better is I want to feel you inside of me. You know, I'm like, come on up here, you know. So we like have sex and, you know, he has his orgasm and I feel great now because I don't have to feel obligated to giving him. I know, it's crazy. Anyway, and so we both fall asleep, and then a few hours later, he wakes me up, and he's like, hey, baby, I got you something. And he holds it, and he goes, look, chocolate chip ice cream. And I'm like, what? Just what I was hoping for breakfast. And so we eat ice cream together in bed, and And I'm eating this ice cream, and I look over at him, and I'm thinking, I see this. He's got, his eyes are like, blah, you know. And I'm like, what am I doing here? You know, because this is actually a pattern of mine. At one point in time, I'd actually slept with a guy all summer long when I was a raft guide in another state because he taught me how to rock climb. And I was like, well, he put so much time and effort into teaching me. At least I can do is sleep with him. And I'm like, what? Why? You know, this is about time you stop doing this, like, obligatory fox, Melanie. So if ever I have a cage fighter, you know, attack me or whatever, and I need someone to defend my honor in a fuck or fight situation, I'm going to have to fight the urge to fuck and just say, thank you. Thank you.
Wow. How was that for you to listen back?
You know, I realize that I've how much healing I've done because I feel so empathetic towards that woman who told that story.
Yeah.
It's really hard for me to relate to her on so many levels, but up until maybe even 5 years ago, I would have judged very harshly. And now I'm like, yep, I get it. Part of it is because I've started to understand, like, even that last bit that I added at the end when I was like, that guy, that man, I was like 21. That man was 40 something.
Oh.
He groomed me. I had no desire. I literally just wanted to learn how to climb. And he tricked me. He cornered me in a parking lot one night and just kissed me. And because I didn't understand my long history of, you know, childhood sexual assault, I assumed that I did something to make him think. I just thought I was a cock tease. And so I just like, whatever. I ended up dating him all summer because of my social conditioning. So my first thoughts about this story is that like the theme of this story is self-abandonment and patriarchal conditioning.
Yeah, yeah.
The way I've been conditioned as a woman in this country is to self-abandon in order to take care of men and them feeling good about themselves and even convince myself that I owe them things I don't owe. And then also, like, my whole history makes sense in this story. Because my whole life, I have always, like, most women I know do this all the time in general, but I will put my safety last if it means protecting the ego of a man. I mean, even taking one for the team, getting my pussy eaten, like, which things have changed. But I have so much to add, Kevin. I took some notes because I have something to add to so many points of that story. So I wrote it down.
I knew you would. I knew you would because it's really interesting not just to hear you speak in a different way back then, but to hear an audience. And there's a lot of reaction from women in the audience who are, a lot of it is resonating for them.
Yeah, they're identifying 100%.
Yeah, that really did strike me, that whole one for the team. Like, the story is so much just constructed stories in your head about the dynamics that are going on, and you like, the charm of the story is that you have to explain these kind of this pretzel logic often for us to be like, or at least me as a man being, or as a gay man, I guess, objectively being like, that's the thinking, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it was so funny because I remember when I was hanging out with a friend of mine in Paris not too long ago. It was a long time. It was like five. It was before I was married. By the way, I'm married. Huh? Guess, surprise. Yeah, I'm married. Me. The last fucking person on the planet I ever thought would say, I'm married. But like 5-6 years ago or something, I was in Paris to meet one of my friends. He's a gay French guy I met in LA who's married to an American man. And I was hanging out with all of them, a bunch of gay guys in France, right? Mm-hmm. And I was trying to hook up with a dude on Tinder. And they were like, God, would you get off your phone? I was on it all day. And I was like, do you have any idea how long it takes to find a man who will eat my pussy and not fucking murder me? Do you have any idea how much trouble it, how much time, how much work? And they're like, they couldn't. Because, and I don't know what it's like to be a gay man, but that I really had to explain to them, do you have any idea how hard it is to fight for my right to come? Mm. And then I didn't have my first orgasm until well after I told this story. 36 oh, years wow. old. 36 wow. years old, I had my first real orgasm from a man. That like not like self
right.
done. And so, you know, and then I have a whole bunch of stories of like, about like going on a Tinder bender of centering my pleasure and making men put it in writing and text that they're going to eat my pussy because otherwise you're not coming over. You know, like mm-hmm. I had to become a complete bitch. And it was the most liberating experience of my life. I've written about it for the Daily Beast and a bunch of other articles I've written about it. But before then, like men never even cared. And if they did, I also just disassociated. I didn't know how to relax. I never felt like safe or, you know, like I couldn't surrender, none of that stuff. But just to find a dude who is willing to care about my, I mean, France, it wasn't as hard, but, you know, and then also not get murdered because I wanted to fuck someone I don't care about. I don't want to like date somebody. And so I was on the phone all day and they thought I was so rude. And then I explained how I have all these tests to make sure and how I have to ask a lot of questions. And, you know, if I say, are you going to eat my pussy? And they're like, well, only if you suck my dick. Buck! You know, like, because that means that like they don't even get that I'm paying like the female tax of like maybe getting murdered just by meeting up with your ass. You know what I mean? And that like just it. So the only reason I brought that up is that like even that like that Melanie back then had never even had an orgasm. And then and then the story that I've told for Rick's, the hour long one where I almost got murdered by a man, the hobo. The homosexual, the man, you know, rode the rails and moved in while I was on vacation. Couldn't get rid of him. Literally ate dog food, dog bones, and brushed his teeth with fucking dirt in his finger. I found, you know, all those crazy details. That was the first man who got me off. So this is coming from somebody who not only didn't know that I had a right to an orgasm, I didn't know that I had a right to anything with men. And that's the place. And so I basically realized like just a few years ago that I went into the outdoor world and I was basically a pick me. And I don't know if you know that lingo, but every woman is a pick me. We're all in the pick me to survive patriarchy. But I became a cool girl, a tough girl that no one would fuck with so I could live my celibate. Like I didn't want to be celibate. I'd fuck every once in a while, but I was truly happy when I wasn't messing with men. They weren't derailing my life. They weren't trying to baby trap me. Even the hobo tried to. They weren't consuming my life. I literally was living my life like a man, doing what I want.
Right.
Consumed,
right.
Like just focused on what I want. And that's why I've had such a great life. People always think I'm lying when I tell them all the crazy stuff I've done. You know, lived in Chile, lived in Argentina, lived in New York, LA, Spain, now France, like all in my truck for 5 years, whitewater raft guide, film industry, blah, 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 blah. I was like, how did you do so much? I was like, I didn't date men. They didn't hijack my life. And so on the rare occasion I did fuck with men, those are the stories I had.
We'll be right back with more of Melanie Hamlet. We're back.
This story, one of the things that strikes me so much, especially like when the fuck or flight situation, when he says this is a case of fuck or flight.
Fuck or fight.
Fuck or fight.
Right, yeah.
Is that it's so wild that like you didn't ask for anything. Like all of a sudden you are like in this elaborate like power dynamic that you have no autonomy over. You didn't ask for, you didn't know it was coming. And all of a sudden, like, you're kind of supposedly the center of it.
Oh, yeah.
But they're no say.
And that's the funniest thing is, like, especially now, I mean, especially after this election, all these men, they're so, like, the incels, they're all obsessed with this, you know, men are protectors. I'm like, of who? Of who? Their ego, themselves, other men? Because not one has ever fucking protected me.
Yeah.
You know?
It's all
and like, these guys are like, oh, you know, like literally that fucker fight. I didn't even realize till listening to it again. It is the perfect, because I talk about this, you know, I'm a YouTuber and a TikToker now, so I do storytelling there. And I'm like known as the person who talks about King Baby. King Baby's like this, he rules with an iron baby fist. I was all the entitlement of a king, but it's fucking worthless, right? Mm. And one of the things that I talk about a lot, because I learned a lot about, and it'd be really interesting to go over my story, the hour-long domestic violence story with you again, with like a therapist. That'd be fascinating. But one of the things I've learned since that story was like how and why I kept falling for these men. And also that all men benefit from the violence of men, and that nice guys benefit from the violence of really violent men. The same way white people benefit from the violence of super racist people, because we look like allies and good people by comparison.
It's true.
Right? And yeah. So Dallas seemed like a nice dude because he wasn't a cage fighter harassing me all night. You know?
That's true, right?
And the funny thing is that I never really picked up on this before, because I haven't heard this story in forever, is that I wasn't bothered really by him, those two harassing me all night, him and Schmeagle. But I felt bad when they started making fun of Dallas. You know?
Oh, what an interesting point. You're right. Because when you were talking about them, one of them called you a cunt, and yep. then and the you were talking very blasé about that. And I was like, yikes, you know? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and the funny thing is that I can't believe he said it out loud that it's a fucker fight situation. That those men, and a lot of men, whether they'll admit it to themselves or not, go somewhere expecting to be able to fuck. And if they don't get the fuck, well, someone's going to pay, right? Like, especially in the South. Now, what I realized, I also, one of the reasons why I was talking to this dude, I probably was talking to him because I'm like, why the hell did I keep talking to this dude? And then I started thinking of, oh, you know, my big sister had to teach me. She's almost like a totally parentified older sister, had to teach me a lot of things I didn't understand, because because of things that happened to me as a child, I was constantly preyed on by older men, like, and just men in general. I didn't know how to say no to them because I always centered their shame. I always self-abandon. If I don't want them to feel bad about themselves. Mm. So I will just sit here on the subway in New York City. I remember a dude jacking off across from me, and all the women around me got up and left. And I sat there. I was like, but I don't want him to feel bad. You know, God forbid he feel bad about himself for doing something awful, because it's rooted in trauma that I now remember and understand, so it makes sense to me. And right. So a lot of women or people on the line may understand that, but if you don't understand it, just a little window into Melanie's head. But my sister had to teach me how to walk away from men I didn't want to talk to, because I didn't know how to do that. Mm. So she was like, if you're at a bar, she would see me on the rare occasion that I'd get to see her and we go out. She'd be like, why did you talk to that dude for an hour? Are you interested? I was like, no. She's like, why are you talking about? I was like, because I didn't want to hurt his feelings. It's like I almost didn't date for all those years because I just knew I was like a fucking nightmare. Right? I was like, probably I'd be dead now if I'd been dating during those times. So it was like self-preservation. No, fuck with men. Just become one and live like one and you'll be okay. And that's how the cool girl came into play. But she was like, if you don't want to talk to them and you don't want to hurt their feelings, or you're afraid to hurt their feelings because these fuckers can't handle rejection a lot of times, just say you got to go to the bathroom and then just don't come back. I didn't know how to do that. So I talked to him all night, probably, A, because didn't want to hurt his feelings. B, didn't know how to get out of that conversation. C, he was super interesting. He was interesting. I mean, he was saying like, fuck off. Like, he was like, I wasn't used to hearing of a redneck in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, because Jackson Hole, Wyoming is full of a bunch of fucking rich private school kids whose parents are paying their rent while they ski all summer. And I was living in my truck. I was sleeping on an inflatable mattress on the floor of some, like, I was not in that category. And so I was kind of over. Now, I met some amazing people there. I had some great friends there. But a lot of the men, and just there's so many men, and a lot of them are just like super rich and privileged and like kind of like that. They look down on Southerners, especially if they're from the Northeast. And so I was like, yeah, I like this guy because he reminds me of my family. You know, my uncle goes to NASCAR. You know what I mean? Like, they talk like, I can't even understand some of my family. They talk like, so they have like double names, Nell Diane. You know what I mean? Like, so it felt kind of like home. And I think the other reason that I was talking to him is because these fuckers were harassing me all night. And at least with him, they would leave me alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And talk about like an example of guys like that not being able to handle rejection. Someone's there has to be bloodshed if one of them feels rejected.
Yeah. Like,
what the fuck is that?
And the funny thing is like, I don't know if Dallas is a good guy or not. I don't give a shit. I mean, nobody's good or bad. Right. Whatever. But I don't know. I enjoyed talking to him and all that stuff. But you know, he wasn't like, he was funny. He was entertaining. And, you know, I'm like a Sagittarius, man. I love traveling. Even when I'm always going to find the person. Yeah. That's why I became a journalist. I love fucking talking to people. So this guy was so fascinating. And before I knew it, I was like, shit, everyone's gone, you know? And now I'm here with these two fuckers. And so I do feel, I still feel bad that he got his ass kicked because we both realized when it was too late that everyone was gone, but these two dudes, and they were, you know, had a revenge, like he was going to fuck or fight. Now, apparently Dallas knew that was the, that those are them the rules, but I didn't know those are the rules. So he wasn't all that surprised by it, but, it's just to me, that is like patriarchy in a perfect fucking like box with a bow on it. Right? Yeah. Like these two guys, and then I have to fuck one, but no one makes me fuck anybody. And that's right. The thing is that while I still stand by what I said in terms of like, I literally convinced myself I had to fuck this dude because of my own trauma that I hadn't quite really dealt with yet because of my patriarchal conditioning that every fucking woman gets. They may not act on it, but we all have it. You can't get out of this without that kind of conditioning. But, you know, I didn't understand how much there was still an expectation there because he's fucking cuddling me, you know? And I let him off the hook so easy. And now, especially, you know, there's a lot of parallels between this and my clown fucking story that I told later on. There's, you know, I fucked the clown for the same reasons. I'd be interesting to listen to all my stories about fucking. Probably all of them have the same through line. Melanie felt like she had to. Melanie felt bad for him. I call it empathy fucking, right? And anytime, like one of the things I have kind of become known as like a woman who helps empower women to decenter men and like heal from this shit so that we stop enabling men and also stop getting in like finding ourselves in relationships where we get killed or almost killed because of how we're conditioned. And one of the biggest things that I've been realizing is that don't date a man or fuck a man that you feel sorry for. And so many women do that because of that whole maternal shit that we're taught that like, oh, that poor baby, had a poor baby.
Right. That's
and the thing is that I also used to think men were stupid. I really did. It's the biggest, like, not all men, but like, I really thought that they're just kind of like falling into these situations. But that man knew exactly what he was doing. He may not have thought, he may not have consciously
put
thought,
the words together.
I'm going to get in a fight, let her like patch me up and then do puppy dog eyes. And I'm going to kind of try to coerce her through feeling bad for me to fuck me. You know, like he may not have had those thoughts in his head or been aware of them, but he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The same way, like what I've realized, I've been deconstructing all this stuff is that I may not have ever had that thought, that conscious thought as a white woman. But I am sure that I'm always aware that I have a position in society where I have that power. And I may not think I'm going to do this. Da, 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 da. So like, so men all know this. They all, it's the understood thing.
Mm-hmm.
The threat of violence at any moment can get women to do any fucking thing you want.
Mm.
You know?
Wow. Holy shit.
And or being the hero from the other threat of violence. So he's the nice guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's funny. I right now, like I've been making videos for so long warning women to not fall for the dork, because the dork with a revenge fantasy is worse than the worst jock. Mm. And we are living that reality right now. We got God. The dork.
Yeah, we're all in an abusive relationship.
The dork Elon and the fucking strongman Trump, and they're the same dude. So mm-hmm. Dallas is not that much different. I mean, I'm not saying, do you know what I mean? Like the nice guys, the artists, the dorks, they benefit from the strong psycho who scares the shit out of everybody. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that they understood that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In the same way that, you know, Dallas understood, this is a fuck or fight situation here. You know?
I'm surprised he had words for it, but and then he just articulated it so well. But, you know, it's just like, so there's so many things in that story, like even, you know, like that. I mean, I kind of glossed over it, but, you know, I also, you know, I do like, I try to put myself in people's shoes all the time. I really. And so when he's telling me these stories about training to be a wrestler, I was like, he had a straight up eating disorder. He literally starved himself all the time. Like listening to him talk, he was literally being forced to run in trash bags in West Virginia in a fucking. So I'm surprised that they don't have people like pass out and die more with like the regiment of that stuff. So there's all these things, you know, where I was like, and I was bulimic at the time, by the way, very bulimic. So I was like, oh, I can relate to that. So there's just so many things where. So many women just our empathy. It kills us. And then the story I told, you know, on the hour long episode of Unbreakable, that's why I didn't leave, is because I thought he couldn't survive without me. I felt so bad for him that I was really willing to die. Right. And that guy didn't give a fuck. He was already cheating, already moved on. And I'm like, what will he do without me? Which is also part of my own conditioning of like, my ego being attached to that fixer, that saver, la, la, la. And so I've been trying to like move away from like that shit. Cause like that, this is how we end up in, I'm not saying this is a victim blaming way. This is like our conditioning. We're all conditioned under this shit. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I didn't put that there. I didn't put that voice like you owe him something there. That was put there through Revenge of the Nerds, Porky's, Meatballs, like every fucking movie I watched growing up was like the jock and the nerd, and they both get to fuck beautiful women for some reason, even though they both suck. And 16 Candles, he's literally hands her a drunk cheerleader or like the most popular girl, like ever, like all like women, we're just pawns, right?
Yeah.
And so I didn't realize. And the thing is like, so I wouldn't be married if I hate men. I fucking love men. I've had so many men in my life. I worked with men. I relate to men. It's funny. Like, I'm like the dude in my marriage. Like, Anthony's the cook. He's the nerd. He's downstairs sick right now. And I'm like, good luck. You know, I'm such a fucking dude. You know, like, I have to remind myself, kiss him before you leave. Tell him you love him. Right? Because I'm just like the, oh, no, no. Like, I'm just like, for lack of a better word, like part of it is, you know, kind of trauma response is what I realized later on why I went so far into the like, and I literally wrote an article for Outside Magazine, the feminist who became a toxically masculine raft guide, right? How can you be a feminist and a toxically masculine at the same time? Well, if you're a cool girl in the outdoor world who's like,
yeah.
Yay, women, but fuck women who wear pink and fuck Barbie. You know, like that's that othering and whatever. So I've kind of come full. Yeah, I wear like pretty shirts now. You've seen me. I usually wear the dumbest clothes with stains on it. Like, I literally, when I would be performing in New York, one of my mentors was like, Melanie, can you please not wear like a shirt with a fucking stain on it? Because it's really distracting. I know you don't want to wear makeup or do your hair, but like, it's distracting that you look like such a slob. And I was like, I don't want to be. Yeah, I was so fucking, you know, I just went so far the other day. I'm kind of in the middle now where I'm like, I'm still a tomboy. I love dirt. I'm like the dude, but I'm also like soft and vulnerable and loving. I have a dog. If you listen to the way I talk, I'm like, oh my God, no. I mean, I'm such a fucking like different person. But I just went so far to that one extreme trying to be a dude, but society kept forcing me to live the reality of a woman, and I was constantly confused.
Yeah.
You know?
I say all the time, especially around sexuality, like one of the interesting things about so many stories on Risk or just, you know, conversations with friends is the imaginary boundaries that are set up around things that people don't question or are questioning in a wrongheaded way. And it is, like you say, it's about conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. If I hate me, right? Like, I mean, I don't now, but like, if I have a voice in my head that is constantly policing myself and constantly, like, to the point where I literally would make myself vomit violently to look pretty. If I have a voice in my head that convinces me to fuck Dallas and a clown and stay with a literal homeless man because I felt bad and, you know, like, all this, if I have a voice in my head that tells me I am nothing, I'm shit, and I owe men stuff. And if I have that in me, and I'm a woman, I have no doubt that that fucking voice is put into men too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then they may have parents and teachers and people in their life that push back against that voice. But the movies, the music, the apps, the teachers at school that are like, we'll put the troubled boy next to the smart girl. It fucks her education, but makes his better. Like, in every part of society, this is what's conditioned, this heteronormative, like, especially like cishet white man, able body, all this crap. And if you're like not in that, like you get kind of, you're just collateral damage, right? And so that's why when men are like, I love women, I'm like, but you got to admit that, like, but you may not like hate them actively, but you've been taught that you are superior,
right?
The same way white people have been taught for some fucking reason we are entitled to all this shit without doing anything, right? That's how men think. And so I know they can unlearn it because I've been unlearning this whiteness crap that was put in me. I don't hate myself that it's there. It's my responsibility to question it and be like, who the fuck, what's that? I find a new version of internalized misogyny every day. I'll look up and I'll be like, oh, look at you, you fucking wrinkly bitch. And I'm like, whoa, where'd that come from? Like, who put that voice there? I didn't put that voice there. But if I am aware of it and can keep it in check and be like, okay, you know what? Like, you know what I mean? It's like,
have you seen the movie The Substance?
No, people can tell me to watch that. Is that new or something? I get recommendations all the time and I'm behind.
Yes, it is. It's made, I think she's French. It's made by a French film director, a woman. And, you know, it causes a ton of discourse. I can give you the basic premise.
Yeah, yeah.
Demi Moore plays an actress.
Oh, okay, that one. The one that's going to the Oscars. Oh, yeah.
Yes,
she, like,
does her face.
I want to see it. I haven't seen it yet because I'm kind of scared to be honest.
It's very scary. The level, so she's basically literally split in two. There's a younger her and the older her.
Yeah.
And the level of violence between the two is really, really striking. And it was the first time I've watched a movie that, like, so in your face about this is what we do to ourselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's a great book by, oh man, I just blanked on her name. It's called The Body Is Not an Apology, that really helped me understand how much, it really helped me frame it this way. Sonia Renee Taylor, what is, oh, I forget her name. I'll think of it later. I hope. Where it was like, look, you have got like this violence. If you don't deal with this violence, this self-policing, you will take it out on someone else. Because people, like, you will never convince me that Elon and Trump love themselves. They fucking hate each other themselves. Their dads, like, Elon's dad, like, married his fucking stepdaughter or some shit. Like, there was so much, there's no telling what went on in those families. Those men hate themselves. And that's why I'm like, you know what? If the one thing I can do is work to, like, work my ass off to stop killing myself through substances, eating disorders, dating violent men. You know, I'm very proud of where I, someone like me should be dead, given how much I was just constantly putting myself in danger. Danger, danger. Mm. I mean, literally, y'all used to introduce me on the stage as, I can't believe she's alive still. I can't believe she hasn't been murdered yet. Like, that's how I would get introduced like that regularly. I'm like, I know. And it was like a joke. But because it's true. People are like, I can't, like, when they hear my stories, they're just like, what the fuck? How are you alive? I'm like, right? You know? Now I understand that, and that's a whole nother episode I could go into. But, you know, once I, like, I still take a lot of risks, but they're not, like, they're not, I might die risks, right? Other than things that are out of my control. I'm at that point. I take huge emotion. I mean, I got fucking married. I fell in love.
Yeah.
I lived with a man. That's literally the most dangerous thing a woman can do, is live with a fucking man. And here I am after almost getting murdered by one. But it's because I did all this, like, that woke me up. That relationship was like, holy shit. This has to be dealt with. I will literally fucking die if I don't deal with whatever this voice is, this codependency, this self-abandonment shit. If I don't deal with this, like the dude sucked. I never even really wanted to date him. I still ended up with him. Like, other than eating pussy, he was a fucking loser. He couldn't do anything. You know, he was dumb as rocks, but a good predator. And yet I was like hooked on him. And I was like, man, you know, I thought that surely I'm too smart for that, you know, but like, so I was like, I got to deal with this thing. And then, yeah, and then I started like kind of getting back into like, you know, dealing with men, but just fucking them for a while, because I wanted nothing to do with love, relationships, commitment, nothing. Right. I just needed to, like, you know. So that's a whole nother story. But I fucked my way out of like rape trauma, basically, successfully. Don't suggest that for everybody. It worked for me because you could get killed doing it. But anyway, you know, I can't believe I ever wanted to even be alone with a man after that, right? I was terrified. And then I was like, but I love men, you know? I was a whitewater raft guy, climber. Like, I literally, film industry, comedy, I get along with men. I love men. I fucking hate patriarchy, though, and what it does to men. And that it kills women and children and trans people and, you know, like LGBTQ plus, like, all, like, we're all fucked under this system, but like I'm just tired of like the violence of it, right? So
yeah.
What I realized was that the more the more focused I am, so I realized I was, as a woman, I was trained to be super codependent, for lack of a better word, so focused on taking care of everybody and, you know, whatever, like, even if I wasn't having babies and even if I wasn't dating men, I still was centering a fucking stranger on a subway and his shame over my safety. Oh my God. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I've been trained to, like, and that's why I kind of went solo. I was the lone wolf because I was so afraid of doing that. But I still had that conditioning, right? So that's how we were conditioned as women, is just caretaking, 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 even if it literally kills us. And then men are conditioned to be like, what do I want? What do I need? I'm individualist mindset, selfish, selfish, selfish. And I believe our journeys is meeting each other in the middle. Women need to be more selfish in terms of like what, like my husband knows me so well that he can tell when I'm spinning out and I'm like going into the Melanie pretzel, and he'll be like, babe, center yourself. What do you want? What do you need? how do you feel? Forget about me or forget about whoever he can, you know, I can convince myself that so-and-so thinks I should do this and I really should to be a good daughter or a good this or a good that. Uh-huh. Even when there's no one putting that pressure on me, right?
Right.
Right? And I'll take a beat and I'm like, shit, I didn't even ask myself, what do I want? Oh, I want to fucking go. I don't want to be at this party. You know what I mean? Because I'll just... And so, like, literally, when I think of this story, it's so much about just self-abandonment.
Yeah.
At every turn.
That's incredible. You know? It's so moving to hear you say that. I think you said something like maybe 5 years ago, you might not have had the compassion for yourself.
Yeah.
But now you feel like you're at a place where you can, like, look back and have compassion for you telling that story.
It's so funny because I've learned a lot more about just domestic violence and coercive control since I told that story for Risk.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it was just finding a community on TikTok of people who had been in this, and we all have the same fucking story. It really helped me not blame myself so much. I was like, holy shit, they all do the same fucking thing. Like one day someone was like, yeah, you know, abusers like to pee on you too. And I was like, oh, I totally forgot. My ex used, I caught him pissing on me in the shower so many times. Like there's all these things where I was like, oh my God. Cause I had so much shame around all this. Like, how the fuck does somebody who I feel like I'm, you know, a survivor. I was literally on a National Geographic show about being a survivor. And the only thing I've almost not survived from is fucking men, right? Like, climber, like, you know, I've couch surfed all over South America, fucking clowns doing this. Like, I traveled by myself all over, lived in a truck, hung off of a mountain. Someone died my first day as a raft guide. Like, I have so many crazy stories. And the most dangerous person in my entire life was my first boyfriend.
Right.
At 36, right. Like, real boyfriend, not like whatever. Situationship, hate fuck, whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so that's why I was like, damn, like this shit for me is more serious than like an addiction. And it operates like an addiction,
mm-hmm.
You know, like yeah. I'm completely gone. It's like I'm on something.
Mm-hmm.
So I really had to deal with like, where the hell is that coming from? How do I deal with that? Like, but I didn't understand how I'd been conditioned to do, like, I started to understand on a personal level, like, what all kind of was behind me, you know, going after, or, you know, being with men who were angry or violent, whatever. Like, I understood my personal thing, but then what was very liberating was to understand the social conditioning behind so much of it, so that I wasn't like, I'm just this fucked up person. It was more like, oh, right, we're all conditioned this way, but it just... It's like it takes a little bit better. Like if you have these, like, you know, if you are, you come from an abusive home life, or if you have these situations,
right.
You're more likely to, like, you know, take on that like self-abandonment shit because you maybe saw your mom do it, or you saw, or like you were forced to as a child because of an abusive parent or whatever. Like, it all started to make sense. But what I understood, it made me feel less lonely, understanding that as a collective, women have all been conditioned this way because they all relate to me. Even people who have literally nothing in common with me are like, yep, I fucked a guy because I felt bad for him. And I was like, you know, I was like, okay. Like we all, it's so... It helped me not judge myself as much. And that's where that self-compassion is coming from. And I was like, oh, right. Because that's how this whole, you got like, if you have like an individualist, like king baby in your house, you have to have a bunch of people that orbit around him. Right.
Yeah.
But what happens if the planets go away? Well, the sun's by himself. Let the fucking sun blow up as a star. I don't know. But like, I don't want to be in your orbit anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if only we could do that with our two king babies over here right now in the U.S.
Yep.
Holy shit. I'll tell you, there's something that is so, like, it's such an honor and a privilege to be able to, like, revisit these stories and kind of tell it anew from a totally different perspective.
I mean, honestly, I was, like, really hoping that I would. Because, like, if I still told that same, I mean, this is like, you, I'm sure you understand this as a storyteller. If I go back and tell any of my stories from you know, a few years ago or longer, if I'm telling them exactly the same way, then I'm probably stuck.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Like, and that's what's interesting about being like a writer and a storyteller on podcasts and stuff is like, I'm not ashamed of any of my work. I just don't agree with how I frame some of it.
Yeah.
Because I've learned more about myself or society or, you know, like domestic violence or whatever. So I like it was true to me in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and so I hope that that's why when I like realized I would tell that hour long story totally different now, I was like, that's a good thing. That yeah. means I've done more healing. That means I've yeah. learned more and I've forgiven myself more, you know.
You should totally have you revisit Unbreakable. And it would be interesting to have you revisit it, maybe talking to like a therapist or a feminist person that you really like click with. That mm-hmm. would be fascinating.
Yeah. And I could think of some people who I'm like mutuals with on TikTok who have huge platforms who probably would,
oh, who might be interested in that,
who I already like love their work. But yeah. And it's funny because like, one of the interesting things that I've also learned is like, there's like always, it's like Anthony, my husband, always talks about the video game, right? It's mm. like you're in a video game level and you know, you're killing the dragons and you have your shields and your weapons and whatever. And then you like master that level and it's like, then you have to go to the next one. Like what the fuck, like you're bored, right? So you go to the next one and it's like challenging different, you know, monsters, whole new weapons you got to learn. Right. And like everything that I learned about dating and stuff and, you know, coming to France, it's like I got to a whole different level. Mm. And at first I had those rose colored and you'll probably understand this when you live in a country for I've been over here at 7 years in France, but in Europe for 8. And it wasn't until the Dominic Pellico case where I was like, oh, right, they're just as fucking violent here. It's just they put you to sleep and rape you. You know, like, I don't know if you know that case, but it really like took my glasses off where I was like, oh, right. It's not, this isn't just an American thing. It's not all American men. It's just really, it's just more extreme and more obvious in the United States. But that same fucking shit is all over, you know? It just looked, the details look different. So I had to learn a whole new skill set of having to deal with this level of rape culture that's a little bit sneakier, you know what I mean?
Right.
And they love to eat pussy here, but, you know, like whatever, that's a huge generalization. Right. But yeah, like one of the lines that I wrote down that was actually really heartbreaking to hear, did I cause this?
Right.
You know,
like for being there.
And I really thought that, like, did I somehow cause this? Because that's also part of my conditioning is like, what did I do to make this happen? And rather than like now, I would never think that. I'd be like, you know, and it's like fuck or fight or flight. I'd fucking flight now. But instead, I was like, well, I guess one, he's going to fight him and I'll fuck him. And never occurred to me just leave. And even when I had the opportunity, even when he was like snoring and asleep, I was like, yeah, but I owe him. Like even, you know, and you know, I forget who wrote that book where she was talking about being in the concentration camps. And even when she got freed from the camp, she realized the Nazis in her head.
Mm.
Fuck, what was that book? Oh, it was so good. And I was like, that's what, like, it's in here. You know, like, this dude was not a threat at all. Not a threat. He was asleep, all good. I could rest assured. But in here, that patriarchal little voice was like, yeah, but.
Well, one of the things that really surprised me listening, hearing it again after all these years was that I forgot how it ended. So when he fell asleep, I was like, oh, okay, you're in the clear. And it's like, no, it carries over to the next day. Like, oh, okay.
And actually, what's not in that story that's left out, because it, you know, didn't fit the story and the time, 10 minutes on stage or whatever. But I dated that guy for a couple weeks. And we were at a bar one night. What is it called? The naughty something, fuck, whatever. It was on the other side of the mountain. And some old man comes in there, like with a leather jacket, limping, And God, his name was Gator. I don't think I've ever told this story. Gator was so, oh, he's so interesting. And he was a hitchhiker because his car had some fucking story. And Dallas invited Gator to come stay at our, at, well, not our house, but at Dallas's house. And I was staying there that night. And then Dallas went to bed. And so I, because I felt bad for Gator, this poor old man, I didn't want him to feel bad. I stayed up and talked to that guy. That man proposed marriage to me. He was touching my face. He was trying to fuck me all night. And I remember looking at the door, looking at the bedroom door being like, Dallas, like, come out, you know? But I froze. I totally froze. Somehow I got out of that situation. And then I drove him. I dropped him off somewhere. This man stalked me all the way to Taos, New Mexico, and found me like a month later.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, because he remembered Rio Grande, Taos, New Mexico. And he went down to the river. So back then, for anybody, I was like a whitewater raft guide and a ski instructor. And so I was nomadic and moving around. So I moved from Jackson Hole, Wyoming, which is where I was in the winter and early spring, to Taos to start the rafting season that summer. Mm. And I get there. And because men don't know or don't care about the violence of men, Gator went down to the river and asked some guide, hey, you know, someone named Melanie, she's a raft guide. And they're like, oh, yeah, I think she works at the restaurant I worked at that I lived in the backyard of. And I went to work that day where I also lived. I lived in like a fucking trailer. I mean, I slept in my truck because the trailer had mice, but it was like my shit was in this trailer. It had mice. It was like disgusting, but I needed a place to park. Mm. And this man was in the parking lot and was like, hey.
Oh, my fucking God.
He showed up in Taos, New Mexico. And because of, and again, if you knew my backstory, which I haven't really told publicly yet the details of it because I'm not quite ready. But if you knew my story, you'd understand why I totally went into, this man stayed, he hung out all night and watched me work. And then I was like, well, you could stay in my trailer, I guess, but I'm sleeping in my, I let this man convince me to sleep in my truck with me. And he fucking spooned me all night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Old ass man. I'm like 23 or something.
Oof.
Totally like reliving childhood trauma of an older man. And he promised me that he was going to buy me a brand new truck with with this diamond mine in Colorado. He had a diamond mine in Colorado.
Of course. Sure. Why not?
He had a diamond mine and he was going to buy me a brand new truck. And I was like, well, fuck it. He's already stalked me. I already let him spoon me all fucking night. I might as well get a free truck out of it. And then he disappeared the next day.
Oh, my God. And, you know, that whole stalking part of the story, like, I'm sure comes from it clicking in for him when he first met you. Oh, I've already got her feeling sorry for me.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like predatory men like my ex, like this man, like all the men who have preyed on me. It's like I have a bullseye right here that says no boundaries. I will not say no. I will like freeze. Like they can, you know, my ex was dumb as rocks, but he was super, you know, he's a predator. Just like, you know, he knew my weaknesses. He could, I mean, and that's how he survives. And so this man probably read was like, oh, this girl can't say no. She will, she's going to center, like, she'll do anything. And he wasn't wrong. I mean, it's so embarrassing that, old hitchhiker man slept in my truck, cuddling me all night. Luckily, I had my clothes on, but I still remember those white socks and his fucking motorcycle jacket and that nasty, nasty smell. And he looked like a short, like plumpier version of like, who's that guy sang in the prison? John, what's his butt? You know, we're all black. Oh, Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash?
Yeah. With a limp. And a crazy backstory that he owned a diamond mine.
Yeah, you know, I this is another pop culture reference, but the show Baby Reindeer.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that?
I didn't get through all the episodes, but I did see like half of it. I don't know why I didn't watch the
rest. I know. That's what I was just about to talk about. After, like, I watched like an episode and a half, and I was so disgusted with the protagonist for allowing himself to be stalked. And people were like, oh no, you have to keep watching because the further you watch, the more you begin to understand how he feels sorry for her and keeps kind of like kind of rolling out the red carpet for it to continue.
Yeah. And then, you know, in the, I mean, my ex stalked me all the time too. So like I've been stalked by a lot of men, and then also I get stalked online now that I'm, you know, I have a big platform. Now that my face is online, they'll fucking blast my shit on a YouTube on their little Red Pill channel. And then all of a sudden I got men attacking me. So I have moderators that help me on YouTube, but, you know, I'm not, this ain't my first stalking rodeo. I am. nobody will ever scare me as much as the fucking hitchhiker gold mine gator.
Yeah, he sounds like a movie character.
I know. And again, I really, like, for the longest time, I didn't tell anybody that story because I was like so embarrassed. I'm like, what the fuck? Why did I do that? And of course, now I understand why. And I used to all just attribute it to childhood trauma and just kind of reliving that again and again. But now I also understand that this man was so manipulative and he literally just made it so fucking hard for me to get rid of him. You know, he was sweet talking my boss. He told my boss that we were old friends from, you know, and I was so embarrassed that how the fuck do I explain that I met this man in a bar when I was fucking Dallas, who I didn't like, you know, who I fucked Dallas because I felt bad he got in a fight. And now this stalker man's here because I felt bad. You know, it's like when you like pull one thread, it's like, oh, wow, this chick's crazy. So, you know, I just have like, and that's the thing. And that's kind of the thing that keeps women in these cycles. It's so embarrassing to tell these stories. It's so embarrassing to admit that I dated a literal hobo, like literal fucking homeless man who had what is that thing like that you tie to a tree? Hammock and a banjo, literal like cartoonishly hobo, you know? And I'm still like in so much debt because of the financial abuse of dating a hobo. You know?
Oh my God.
But once I found my people on TikTok who had hashtag hobosexual, I was like, oh damn, this is like a scheme. There's a lot of them out there.
Wow.
And they all eat pussy real good. That's us. You know? Beware of men who eat pussy too good because they probably don't have any money. You know?
That's their winning formula.
It's a survival mechanism, you know? So Insane. Anyway, like that's why I'm a storyteller. I realized that, like, you know, you know the deal. You can't really tell stories that you are too ashamed of and haven't really had any resolution because it doesn't give hope. And it definitely throws you into resentment or victim mode. And nobody wants to listen to that shit.
Mm-hmm.
But once, you know, you have distance and perspective and some healing around that story, it's life-changing, world-changing shit. Because other women's stories on, like, in communities on TikTok of survivors healed something for me where I was like, oh, I am not fucking dumb. I just got played and I had all this trauma and it all makes sense. And I was raised in a society where I literally watched nerds peeping at women in the fucking bathroom through pork, like literally like sexually assaulting women in front of us.
Right. And that was normalized. That was the pop culture we were raised on. Yeah.
So like, of course this, you know, I'm unlearning this stuff. So I, you know, it's been an interesting journey because I don't know, what was the last story I did that? I think I talked about my dad, I think on stage, but the last podcast video story
and
I did.
I think that you've had some realizations or growth around your dad too then. Yeah.
I mean, cause he's, that story, I'm not ready to revisit that story because I'm still in it, but, I'm not actually in it, but I'm not, there's a difference between being having like healing around a story and then wanting to share it. And right. I don't know about you, but like the bigger my platform gets, the more private I actually get. I don't share shit anymore. I put hearts over people's faces. Like the only people anyone sees on my platform is Anthony's because it's public record. You know, all they got to do is Google them. Mm-hmm. No friends, no children, nothing, because people are fucking crazy online, you know, especially if they're fans of your work. So, you know, I love storytelling, but I'm very particular about the stories I tell.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I've found myself becoming more and more like that, too.
Mm-hmm.
But that does make revisiting old stories pretty damn fascinating.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I remember I was at a sex party once and a fella, you know, it was a gay sex party and, you know, everyone's walking around in their jock straps or whatever. And a fella came up to me and he was like, "Oh my God, you're Kevin Allison. I love your podcast." Like that story, Kevin goes to Provincetown, to P-Town, like made such an impression on me. And I wanted to strangle you when I heard that story because don't you realize how cruel that guy was to you? And I it really kind of stopped me in my tracks.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me also of the time that my therapist, I shared a story with my therapist about the time I almost drowned in the Colorado River.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost, I make a joke throughout the whole story about what an idiot I am. You know, what a space cadet idiot and yada, yada. And my therapist was like, "You have so much compassion for other characters in your stories, but none for yourself. In fact, it's your lack of compassion for yourself that's probably the real reason you damn near drowned yourself."
Yep. Yep.
So,
I have a similar, I didn't include this in the Risk story about fucking the clown, but I remember like
it always just sounds so funny.
I know for anybody who hasn't heard that story, no, he wasn't wearing makeup. Blue Angel. But I remember, so after that happened, and again, that was another thing where, like, first of all, it was a cultural difference, which I also want to recognize, because a lot of people, you know, it's like, yeah. And if you're in one culture where seduction is a really big part of the culture, then like there's going to be a disconnect. But at the end of the day, this dude's still a man, you know? And, you know, but that's also a story. Like, I didn't feel any threat of violence from that man. Yes. He was trying to wear me down, wear me out until like I was like, and so many women can relate to fucking dudes because they just got tired of saying no. And they're like, fuck it. It's like easier to fuck you than to just keep saying no. You know, even though I actually didn't think that he would overpower me. It was more an emotional manipulation. Right. But part of me, and I tell it in that story, was like, well, and this is how I convinced myself a little, but this is before I was an actual journalist, a little journalist in me, a little investigative reporter, was like, well, at least it'd be a good story. What's it like to fuck a clown? I never done that before. You know, a new adventure. I love new experiences. And ADHD is always looking for a dopamine fix. Like I love new novel, new shit, you know?
Uh-huh.
And after that whole thing, I felt so gross, because that story is pretty fucking gross. If you remember, the details of it are so nasty. And that's coming from me, man. I'm not, you know, it takes a lot to gross me out. But I remember calling one of like a mentor of mine, and she goes, you know, I know that you think that you're like, I know you're a comedian and you have all these funny stories, but at what point are you going to realize that you're the fucking joke sometimes? You are the butt of that joke, not him.
Right.
Like, yeah, like the context of fucking a clown, that's always going to get a laugh. But in this story, you feel disgusting. You are the butt of that joke. Like, it's not funny. It's not a funny joke. And I was like, oh my God, I sold myself out. There's a lot of reasons for it. You know, again, all the things that led me to do the same thing with Dallas and all these other men is like a self-abandonment conditioning, whatever. But at the end of the day, I justified it. Right. And the brain is it's an incredible thing, you know, I mean, and especially if you had to do this as a child, like if you were someone in your family was a predator. You're constantly doing these mental gymnastics because you have to love this person.
Right.
Because they feed you and you'll die if you don't love them. So you do all these mental gymnastics to blame yourself for everything they're doing because you have to love this person. Right.
Right.
And so if you have that plus patriarchy, which kind of does the same thing on a like systemic level, then you find yourself in situations where you're like, I can mental gymnastics myself. I can pretzel my way and anything and convince myself it was my idea. And I did get a good story. It's one of my favorite stories. Mm. I don't necessarily regret fucking that clown, but I do empathize with the Melanie who had felt like who self-abandoned in order to get the story. And also because she didn't know how to say no, you know? Wow.
Yeah.
Like, now I don't do things just for the story anymore.
Right.
And I used to. No, I mean, I wouldn't do things just for story. Like, oh, I'm going to die. Because, like, I didn't make money telling stories on stage. Like, but it was more like the new experience. And I'm a very curious person. All storytellers are. Like that's how we have crazy stories. We're like, well, I wonder what's behind this door. And, right. And anybody watching from home is like, no. Well, we're like, what's the worst that could happen? Totally. Right? So there's a lot of like, and that's the thing. I love my life being, well, I was a raft guide and all that stuff. But I also like the 2, 3, 5 things can be true at the same time. I loved my life being like doing whatever I wanted, challenging myself. But I also realized that I was constantly putting myself in dangerous situations because that felt familiar. Mm. And also, I do think there's something about people who go out and seek danger and seek uncomfortable homes or uncomfortable sports or uncomfortable things as self-punishment. And also this false sense of control over things you couldn't control before. So, okay, you know, I'm scared of men and scared of like this person in me that abandons myself with men. But if I can climb that fucking mountain 11 pitches off and hang off of a, you know, one cam and a rope and some pieces of metal, and most men would never fucking do that. And I know that I'm tougher than all them. Okay, sure. They might rape me. They may traumatize me, but I'm tougher than them. Mm. You know, like the shit that you do to kind of, it's like maladaptive shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so there's a part of me, I will always be really proud of all these things that I did because I really wanted to prove that I was unbreakable, but I am fucking breakable. I'm a human being, you know, like I broke and then I put myself back together, you know, but I was trying so hard to be tough to avoid being hurt. And in the end, I almost got raped. I mean, I got raped and almost murdered anyway. So like, it didn't work out so well. but I am proud of all those things that I did. I taught myself, you know, like I became a raft guide. I became a climber. I traveled a lot. I did all of this stuff. So I'm like also try to recognize that not everything that I've done and all of the thing, like everything is like trauma. It was just Melanie being Melanie. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Finding your way.
I could go into that like, oh, everything was about hating myself. And that's not true. You know, I loved those jobs. Mm-hmm. I love challenging myself. I still do. I moved to fucking France not knowing a goddamn word. Like, what the hell? That's just what I do. I just put myself in situations and figure it out. I'm really good at that.
That's incredible. Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad we decided to listen back to this story with you giving a new perspective, a new vantage point on it.
Me too.
That was so smart. Yeah.
I'm trying to see if there's anything else that I wanted to, that I wrote down because I think I've actually covered it all. I didn't even need to look at my notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, you know, the, it's just, it's so funny because my husband doesn't, he's learned about me through, he's listened to all my risk stories, you know? Mm. And it's so funny because it's hard to watch him listen to them because he doesn't know that person. I'm not afraid of, I know he can handle it. But like, it's hard to see him listen to so much, so many awful stories of what men have done to me. He gets he's so angry for me, you know, but he also doesn't want to center his reaction or his feelings. And so like, he doesn't, you know, I don't hide anything from him, but I also like, God, it's sometimes I do think it's hard, sometimes harder for, like, when I was in an abusive relationship, my sister and my best friend, Liz, man, they are still dealing with the trauma of watching someone they love almost die, you know, like that secondary trauma. So, you know, as storytellers, especially as we, when we tell this, we always have not just think about our audience in terms of people out there we don't see, but it's also like, it's just fascinating because he doesn't even know this. He knows who I am now, who's gone through all that, come out the other end and learned the lessons. Like, he's met me at the level 12 of this video game. So he's like fascinated by level 4 Melanie doing all this stuff. But he also is like, but then he also appreciates my journey. He was like, God damn, you're fucking amazing. I can't believe you've been through all this. And yeah, like, God, you know, so you could probably relate to that with people in your life who hear your stories and they're just like, oh my God, it's so hard to hear you tell these stories sometimes. You know what I mean? But the thing is, they know how you are now. So it's like a lot easier. You're not telling them in the story.
Yeah. Holy
but yeah, man, shit. I don't think like, I definitely haven't told a story since for Risk since I met Anthony or got met, like I don't think anybody at Risk even knows I'm married unless they follow me outside of this like this thing. They probably shocked to fucking hear this if any of them know my old stuff. Like Dora, you know, traveling around with a pinata,
talking to a fucking
doll because I don't know how to talk about my feelings and I'm such a lone wolf. How the hell did I end up married? I have a dog. He's asleep right next to me. He's a sweet little baby. Yes, you are.
Oh my God.
That's incredible. Well, yes, we should definitely look into having you back to give a listen back to Unbreakable with a guest. I think that would be incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thank you so much for today, because this was such a, I don't know, you know, we're going through such a rough time right now. Like I said before, it feels like we're all in a sort of an abusive relationship right now.
Yeah.
And so there's something very like inspiring about hearing someone who went through something and came down from the mountain, as you would say, to talk about it, but then came back down the mountain years later to be like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, went to the bigger mountain behind and was like, wait, hold on. I saw the top of that mountain from a higher mountain. I'm like, damn, that was something else.
Totally. You know? That's
and, you awesome. Know, I mean, honestly, having been, like, Trump reminds me so much of my ex and always has that I'm like, I feel like I handle him really, like, I actually feel like I know how to handle what's happening right now, because I'm like, okay, this is where he's going to overwhelm us. This is when he's going to like say 500 lies so that we don't even know which one. Like, I kind of know the tactics of an abuser on a personal level, like too up close and personal. And I'm not saying that I'm not but so I'm like, it's not new territory. So I'm like, yep. So I'm kind of, you know, was a nervous wreck before the election because I kind of knew this was going to happen, but I was like kind of prepared for it. So now I'm just, I don't know, whatever. I don't want to make too many parallels, but it's just, yeah, everybody is in is stuck in a house with an abusive daddy, you know? And then some of the kids are way more vulnerable than others.
Right.
And we're being triangulated against each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we got mom covering for dad and being like, no, it's not that bad. You know, like, so Lordy. It's literally like so many people like reliving their fucking childhood right now on a collective level, you know,
yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, so I'm so glad we did this, Kevin. I'd love to chat with you again. And it was fun. It's good to see you too.
You too, yeah. It really feels like we're old veterans, like we're war-torn veterans.
Yeah, I mean, I told so many stories pretty back-to-back, and they're all, like, pretty – they're all very different. But they were, you know, over maybe, like, a 7 or 8 year time frame. But, like – but there's so much has changed in, like, the 7 years or whatever since I told my last story that it really feels like – what, like, I really can't relate to this girl in this story. Like, I know her. But it's shocking to still. Because sometimes, and it's good. It's humbling. It gives you that gratitude of like, damn, bitch, you've been through a lot. I'm so glad I took the lesson instead of just kept doing the same shit. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And, so and that you're not
like Demi Moore ripping one another apart.
Yeah. And the cool thing is that even though I can't change anybody else, I have noticed in my personal life, in my community, but especially in my family, that the more I just focus on healing my shit, it changes the dynamics. I can't change people, but my dynamic with people. And I've actually seen some people in my family finally get to heal because they weren't so worried about me all the time.
Oh, wow. Wow. Uh-huh.
My sister, especially, she finally gets to focus on herself because it's not everything about protecting Melanie.
Wow.
And when she met Anthony, we got married during COVID or during the, you know, the summer of like 2020 over Zoom. Borders were closed. You know, nobody could be here. Masks, everything. They met him a year later. And my sister got to meet him in person because she really loved him. She hugged him, and this is where we're about to leave. And she goes, and like, oh, it's like gives me chills every time I say it. She was like, she told me later, this is the first time that I hugged you goodbye and wasn't worried that was the last time I'd ever see you again.
Oh my God.
It's the first time in my life I've ever hugged you goodbye and wasn't convinced that might be the last time. She's like, I'm not worried about you dying all the time anymore.
Wow.
And when you take that out of the equation, then the people who were so worried about like that, now she can focus on herself, you know? And, you know, so I really, it's really, we can't change the world, but it's focusing on my shit and healing my shit, like really working hard. It does actually change little by little my world. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's incredible.
Anyway. Yeah, so now people can't interrupt. We can't believe you're still alive because I'm such a wimp. I'm like, I don't want to go. Yeah, I don't like. I'm so afraid of dying. I'm afraid of flying now. I'm like, what if we crash? I'm like, I think a lot of us are now afraid of flying.
Yeah,
especially now. But I feel like I used all my like 99 lives up. So I'm like, So I love life and I love my life and I love myself so much now. And I know I have a lot to offer and give that I don't want to just die for some stupid shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I'm still adventurous and brave, but like in much different ways. It doesn't involve like the risk of death constantly.
Yeah. That's incredible.
So
that's wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for, it's good to see you too. Hang out and chat.
Indeed. Well, that is all of my conversation with Melanie Hamlet. Again, don't miss out on her TikTok at Mel Hamlet. She's so brilliant over there. And soon we'll be revisiting Melanie's hour-long story, Unbreakable, her most well-known risk story. And she's going to have a conversation about it, not with me, but with a therapist who does a lot of work with people who have been on both sides of abusive relationships. Thanks so much for checking out these new experimental episodes we've been doing in both video and audio formats. And folks, today's the day. Take a risk.